Hello, everyone, and welcome to Creative Psychopaths, a horror movie podcast and the world's premier kitchen for horror sandwiches. What are horror sandwiches, I hear you ask? Well, it's a lovely movie filling surrounded by two slices of chatty goodness. My name's Mark, and as always, I'm joined by Matthew. Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Mark.
How are you this week?
Not too bad. Oh, ticking along, keeping going as we do.
Right, yeah, that's all you could ask for in this lovely February, slightly longer February, which is annoying. Anyway.
Yeah, salaried worker, so it's the one day a year where we work for free.
Yeah, one day for free, you
bastards.
Well, I was going to say that, but it felt so harsh.
Not harsh enough. Should be a national bank holiday.
Yeah, you're right. Who can we ask? Doesn't matter anyway. So we're in the versus month. We've passed through effed up February. We're going to try to be slightly less miserable by fighting things. I'm not quite sure. Anyway, we're joined the whole month by our movie duelist. He's got his weapons all sharpened and ready to fight. It's Peter. Hello, Peter. I don't know why I said your name so weird.
That's all right. Hello. Hello, Matthew. Hello, Mark.
Hello. Well, you're becoming a regular guest now, and because you chose the theme for this month, you're coming on, and we're going to talk about movies with a versus theme.
Excited.
It is exciting. I'm waiting to see, waiting to find out what monsters go to war, and who comes out on top in the end. That'd be lovely. And whether there's a definitive winner, that's something that I'm looking forward to. They often sort of just go, oh, well, I think everyone won. Or no one won.
Sometimes you need a sequel.
Yeah, sometimes I do. And sometimes they don't. And sometimes they shouldn't have been made in the first place. I don't know what exciting things I've done this week. I sort of tried to dip into horror video games. I started playing the remake of Resident Evil 2.
I did. It's just not dropped on Game Pass, I think, for Xbox.
Oh, I think that must be something. Well, it was on the PlayStation, but yeah, something like that. Oh, you can play this if you want. And I went, all right, then why not? I remember playing Resident Evil 2 back in the day. It was one of my favorites.
Me too.
It's a bit more scary. It's actually a lot more scary. And I quite like it. Nice bit of atmosphere. Horror gaming. I started to wonder if I should Twitch, and then I thought, probably not. I don't have the equipment to Twitch. I don't even know how people do it, really. You just get a webcam, I suppose.
I struggle enough to play video games. I don't think I could maintain a Twitch channel. Also, I don't think anyone would want to watch me just get grumpy.
Well, I got one of those. I got one of those like retro boxes that you plug in and play at the back, and it's got like, you know, all the old sort of NES, SNES, and Mega Drive, and PlayStation, and stuff on.
Oh, epic!
No, it's not, because I nearly threw the controller at the television playing Tekken 2.
who is your person of choice on Tekken 2?
It was Jack on this particular one. Or Jack 2.
I was a harangue man or whatever he was called. The guy that did Taekwondo. A lot of kicking.
That was only Tekken 3, wasn't it? Because I was the same.
Oh, was that Tekken 3?
It was, yeah. I can't remember who was my guy. I think it was Lee in Tekken 2.
Mm.
It was my that backflip kick that won it for me.
Maybe I would Nina Williams then. I don't remember playing Tekken 2 now. I'm not sure.
Well, I don't know.
So it wasn't. I thought the thing was that like she was a spy and stuff, but I don't remember Ireland having a secret service.
Maybe it was that secret.
Maybe they're just a really good secret service.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know where you've got Irish from. I don't think she is. Nina Williams.
I'm going to have to Google it now.
All right, you do that. we us three boys here, we've bad influence on each other there, and we've veered away from anything relevant to this week.
Well, I was going to come back round and say that it has actually got Silent Hill on there, but I haven't started playing that yet.
And I can confirm that Nina Williams is Irish.
Yeah. Yeah, no, so Silent Hill, that sounds like fun. I liked the second one better, and I think they're doing a little remaster of that. And I'm looking forward to being attacked by Triangle Head. Pyramid Head, sorry.
Pyramid Head, yeah.
Yeah. And I hope they still have the secret ending where it's all a dog.
Well, the first one had the secret ending where it was aliens.
Ooh,
aliens. I remember actually getting that and thinking, what the hell?
I prefer it being a dog.
Yeah.
Just some annoyed dong. Right. Let's steer away from that and get into the lovely first slice of bread. So this week is International Women's Day. Correct?
Yep. Friday the 8th of March.
Friday the 8th of March. So what we thought we might do is talk about some of our famous female-directed horrors. This is influenced by Peter and his podcast, Movie Jill, which you should go listen to, where one of the questions on there is favorite horror directed by a woman. I picked Saint Maud for my one. And I don't remember who Matthew picked. Well, did he get that question?
No, that was before we'd done that episode, so Matthew didn't get that.
Oh, well, if you want to hear what I had to say about Saint Maud, then you need to go listen to my bonus episode with Peter. Other than that, I'm going to keep shtum about it.
Well, the proper episode, the full version was the Babadook and Near Dark, wasn't it?
It was, yes. Yeah, I picked the Babadook by Jennifer Kent, and Tarquin, who was my co-host on the episode, picked Near Dark by Catherine Bigelow.
So I think if I had free choice, I would have gone with you and gone with the Babadook, I think.
Oh, thank you.
If I'm going to have to pick one that none of you have said, I reckon probably Titan that we covered the other week. Or possibly American Psycho, just to...
Yeah, they were both... Well, they were... American Psycho was a consideration for me. I almost picked the other of, I'm going to really butcher her name here, but Julia.
De Cornell.
Her debut.
I'm not saying that with authority.
I believe it was her debut was Raw, which is, I thought was better than Titan. Just a really great, just bizarre film. Probably even more bizarre than Titan, I would say. It's certainly, is it an equally difficult watch?
Yeah.
Especially if you're hungry.
Which I always am.
Yeah, me too. I was consuming a cookie before this. actually, Roland. but there have been some really amazing horror films directed by women. Mm. And I think, sadly, some of these things get sort of tossed to one side. And when people talk about legendary horror directors, you know, there's a handful of names, and I'd say, I'd probably say all of them are men, you know, when it comes down to it. But over the years, there's been some fantastic movies. I mean, even going back to the 80s, when you look at something like Slumber Party Massacre, which was directed mm-hmm. by a, directed and written by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, originally when it was written to be more of like, you know, not necessarily tongue-in-cheek, but something more, if I was going to compare it to something modern, more like akin to like a Mean Girls or something like that. But I think it was Roger Corman who sort of made it a bit more, I'd say, male-friendly, if anything. And so it's more of a horror film, but I think the great thing about this is over the years, it's, you know, it's gotten that cult following, and it is, you know, while it isn't an amazing movie, it there's plenty in it to enjoy and plenty of funny moments, and, you know, it just, and in fact, a couple of decent scares actually in it. And actually, it is all right.
I think the trouble though with female horror directors is that there've not really been any that have consistently kicked out horror films. Really, you've got probably Mary Harron, who directed American Psycho. She's done some horror adjacent stuff. She did a film about Charles Manson. Another one called The Moth Diaries, which I believe is a horror. Or a film called I Shot Andy Warhol, which is pretty horrific. I remember watching that quite young. I suppose the closest really is probably Mary Lambert. She did Pet Sematary 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
Urban Legend, Bloody Mary, which is not great, and neither's Pet Sematary 2. But there's not a lot. You know, most female directors who have dipped a toe into horror have only sort of dipped that toe in once or maybe twice.
Yeah,
so you don't get people like, you know, your Carpenters and your Cravens and your Raimis that, you know, keep going back to you know, horror films.
Yeah, I think there's an aspect of that is that horror is traditionally low budget, low risk, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's easier for people that struggle to get in the, you know, to get a foot in the door, to get films made. It's easier to get a film done in horror than it is in, you know, in other genres that take a bit more risk. And there's a list on Rotten Tomatoes, an interesting editorial list of the 50 best horror films directed by women. And it's pretty shocking just how recent all of these entries are on the list.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, the I've got it in front of me, and the top 10 at least. I'm keeping going. 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. You know, all of the top 20 at least are in the last 10 years.
Well,
you know, so it just shows that, you know, it's something that that move towards equality is still so recent, and it's pretty shocking how little women have been able to, you know, to get a foot in the door and to work on films. I've actually got the 37, which is the first film outside the last decade, and that's Near Dark.
Wow.
So you've got the top 36 horror films directed by women coming out in the last 10 years. If you compare that to men, how many would you say of the top 36 horror films would have been in the last 10 years? You know, maybe half, if we're generous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, on one hand, it's exciting because it shows that there's going to be some exciting voices to come, and hopefully we will get some, you know, some voices that stick around and establish themselves, like your Carpenters and your Wes Cravens.
I think one that we might actually is Lee Janaik, I think her name's pronounced. who made the Fear Street trilogy. Because I know she did a horror before that, and I believe they're making another trilogy. Don't know if she's involved with that, but she's obviously got a good eye for horror. I mean, there were sort of mixed returns, really, with the Fear Street trilogy, I thought, but it was definitely entertaining, and it was definitely somebody who's got a good eye for horror.
Yeah, I mean, those Fear Street films I had a lot of fun with. I mean, not all of them were... Well, I don't think any of them were, I would put as, like, you know, top drawer films, but
no,
none of them were bad. You know, they were all three and a half, four-star films. Yeah, which is... It's a hard thing to do, especially when you've got three, you know, coming out, you know, pretty much all at the same time, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they were a week after each other, weren't they? Something like that.
Yeah, each week, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
But then you've got the likes of Jennifer Kent, who made The Babadook, and Rose Glass, who made St. Maud, and their sort of follow-ups are not necessarily horror. But I suppose that the horror, The Nightingale is kind of horror adjacent. It's incredibly horrific. And Love Lies Bleeding, I think, is described more of as a sort of crime thriller, I think.
Yeah, that's the tone the trailers certainly give.
Yeah.
But it looks great. Yeah, I can't wait to see that one.
But then I suppose you could argue that is St. Maud actually horror?
We covered it, so yes, I am saying that.
Well, yes, but yeah, it's...
We have actually covered quite a lot of these top films. I'm quite happy with what we've done. Films like Censor, Soft and Quiet, like that we did last week, and then say films that we've not necessarily covered but spoken about a bit, like Deadstream, Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. You know, so there's a lot of good stuff there that we've spoken about and recommended.
Yeah.
What, Mark, one of your favourites from last year, Who Am I, Sarah? That is the greatest, according to Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, and that was on my top five of last year, and that is really good. And it sort of, I think, leans a little bit into the... as horror's taken a bit of a change towards, you know, being a bit more psychological and also tackling issues that, you know, that are potentially affect women more. It's helped them find a voice there. I mean, Sarah's is essentially about, you know, motherhood, really. And it's great for it. So I think that really does help the change in horror has helped more female directors lately find their voice and find a market for it. Because, I mean, in terms of, like, the great slashers, I mean, that was all sort of done in the 80s, really. I mean, we've had very, very few since then that stand out as being fantastic, except, you know, there are exceptions to the rule, Scream and stuff like that. But that sort of thing has died a death. And, you know, hopefully Hollywood has changed. I mean, sadly, we all know, you know, back in those days, it was very much a male thing. So, It's great to see these things happen. And you know, going back to the Slumber Party Massacre one, I know that Amy, who directed that, she went on and wrote quite a few films. She co-wrote Beethoven and Indecent Proposal. You know, she in fact wrote Indecent Proposal. So yeah, she didn't stick within the horror genre, but she was a talented writer. And I do, every time I sort of hear about that film, sorry, going back to it, it does upset me slightly that the vision of the film was changed so much to just become something more in tune with what boys like. But, you know, there are other... I mean, Titania, you already mentioned that we covered on this. That was next level good, you know. So, I'm going to get onto Raw as soon as I can. But, you know, that change, that sort of modern era, the modern era of horror is probably some of the best horror we've had for a long time.
Well, I would say, you know, a lot of my favorite horrors from the last 10 years are female directors. You know, The Babadook, St. Maud, Raw.
Yeah.
The Invitation was directed by Karen Kazama, and even, I wouldn't say it's one of my favorites the last 10 years, but it was a film that was way better than it had any right to be. It was The Candyman. Requel, directed by Nia DaCosta.
Yeah, that was good.
That was really, really good. You know, The Invitation and Candyman, they're both sort of male-led stories as well. So I think, you know, it's not just females telling female stories. It's, you know, they're just making good films, period.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think the great thing, and we've spoken about this before when it comes to foreign languages as well, over the sort of past maybe 10 years ago, people branch out more into different areas. They're happy to watch. Well, they probably don't even know some of the films are female directed, but, you know, people will dip into different areas of horror now. You know, there are though, purists who will only like slasher movies, and that's fine. I think, you know, these days it's just great stuff. And I think, what year was it we saw Hatching? That was female directed as well, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I think that was 2022, that one.
Yeah, yeah. Because we both saw that at a screen unseen. And I must admit, I don't think I was a huge fan of it at the time, but it's certainly a movie that's popped back into my brain a few times, and it certainly it was good stuff. And
I think, yeah, just to put a final point on it, is that
good stuff,
you know, when there is, you know, a diversity of all kinds behind the camera in the writing rooms, you know, we all win, because it gives us more interesting stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, not everything's going to be for me, not everything's going to be for you, but it will give more stuff, you know, more potential for different things to enjoy, because, you know, cinema was kind of boring up until sort of 10 years ago, and then we seem to have had an explosion of new voices since then, and we've had a lot of, you know, a lot of really great films, like all-time great films over the last 10 years.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And that's across all cinema, not just horror.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Though none of us mentioned Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare. That was directed by Rachel Talahi.
Well, that's a shame, because Sir Matthew would like that one.
I did, yeah.
Yeah. We've already covered that one extensively, though, so I don't think we need to do that. Well, yeah, so, yeah, that was lovely. Nice little chat there. It's always nice to cover these things, you know. We're not just hilarious around here. Sometimes we've got nice things to say. And I don't think we're ever hilarious. Right, with all that said, let's get into the filling this week, which is a lovely versus movie. It's Alien versus Predator from 2004, directed by Paul W.S. Anderson. starring Sana Lathan as Alexa Woods, Lance Henriksen as, it says Bishop here on Google. He's not Bishop in this, is he?
He's Charles Bishop Wayland.
Oh, is he? Charles Bishop Wayland. Oh, there you go, you see. Truth is, with this movie, there's a few people in it, but nobody particularly stands out that I would go back and list through the characters. I mean, if I were looking at it now, I don't think I'd even know what the main character was called. I know Spud's in it. I can't even find him listed. What's the name of that actor? Can you remember?
Ewan Bremner.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Ewan Bremner's in it as well. Why is he not listed as starring in it? Anyway.
He's took his name off it.
Yeah. So, Peter, you brought this one along. This is starting off the Versus month. What made you put us through this?
Well, I just thought it would be, I mean, it's got to be one of the most famous Versus movies. I mean, it was one of those films that was talked about for a long time and teased in Predator 2, and, you know, went through various different forms of media, whether it was video games, comic books, novels. It just went everywhere before it got made into a film. It was sort of sat in development hell for a long time. And it was a film I really looked forward to when it finally did sort of start to get made. And two of my favourite franchises as well. But I just thought it would be a really interesting film to discuss because it's certainly not an epic. But I think it's got some interesting conversation points.
So, Matthew, I presume this wasn't a first watch for you. You've probably seen this before.
No, this was a first watch for me.
Oh, really? First watch?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know who directed this film when I was watching it. And about 40 minutes in, I just remember, this really does feel like a Paul W.S. Anderson film.
And you were right.
And that's not a compliment. As much as I loved Event Horizon, I think everything else that he's done is, well, to be honest, the only thing that stopped me just being absolutely convinced that it was a Paul W.S. Anderson film was that I didn't see Milla Jovovich. But yeah, so Alien is a film about a group of people being hunted by this alien, and Predator is about a group of people being hunted by the Predator, and then Alien is basically people with brains, Predator, people with brawn, and this film does something really interesting in that it has the aliens and predators up against people who have neither. So, I mean, that's a nice counterpoint, I suppose.
I'm not sure. I guess so. I mean, well, let me dig into the plot slightly, if there is one. Essentially, Lance Henriksen's character plays a rich guy. They find what seems to be a pyramid underground. They assemble a team of people that nobody remembers who they are. Maybe you guys do. Maybe you guys were loving the characters and their names, whatever they may be. And so it turns out this pyramid was made by the Predators or something. So they could hunt aliens at some point.
I think The idea is that the predators taught this ancient civilization how to build pyramids, and these pyramids were essentially traps for human sacrifices so that they could give birth to the aliens, and then the xenomorphs were then used as like a proving ground for the young predators to prove themselves as warriors, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially the plot of this film. But this time, the humans sort of get involved, but they didn't know there were going to be sacrifices.
So that's a big problem for this film, because these pyramids have been... Well, they speak about Egypt, don't they, as being one of them. So about 5,000 years, give or take. So we have so many records that have survived from around that time. And historians and archaeologists have been able to piece all of that together to give us an idea of the past. Obviously, any historian or archaeologist will tell you that our idea is skewed, but we construct the idea that the evidence points us toward. So we've got all of that from this period, but somehow the idea that the entire planet is just a farm for a sophisticated species hunting ground somehow managed to slip through without any kind of record other than some decorations in one of the pyramids.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's the sort of film you want to be digging too far into what the plot is. You know.
No, but the problem that I have with it is that the concept I like, so I really do. I think it's very strong that you have to get these, you have to get these people together somehow, and you have to tie it to something emotional, you know, to character. So you need to tie it to a human character. So you can't really do that in space.
No,
you know. So you need some way to get them onto Earth. I mean, obviously, it trods all over the basically Alien and Predator. It, you know, tramples all over the stories there, but it's interesting, and there is a way that you could make it work, but unfortunately they've taken that idea and just kind of done it without any real thought as to how it works in, you know, in the way they've done it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just got for the plot that it has got, it has this really awful sort of exposition as well, which we mainly sort of get from the Sebastian character, who's sort of the Italian guy who gets all the terrible lines in this film, and it's just so jarring when he's literally just talking you through what either, you know, the visuals are showing you or just pointing out the obvious, which is really distracting in this film. I think the human element of the film is really where it falls apart, because, like one of you said, you just don't really care about the people. You know, you don't take in anybody's character. You don't sort of have memorable characters in this film. And it starts to try and do the legwork with it, like Ewan Bremmer's character. He's, you know, when they're traveling to the wherever it is, the Antarctic outpost or whatever, he's showing us pictures of his children, and, you know, it's having his photo taken to send back to his kids and stuff. So it's meant to build that empathy for him. And then it doesn't really go anywhere. He's dispatched quite early on in the film, and you just don't really care that he has been either.
I think he was the only one that I was rooting for. And that might have been just because he was Spud.
Yeah.
That's mainly. And there's so many weird moments in this film that don't make any sense. Like the Italian guy's wearing that Pepsi Cola cap that we just saw him get. So what's the sentimental value of that? Because from what I understand, it, watching the film, it was an unsuccessful dig where they found this. And so he's wearing it around his neck for what reason, the sentimental bottle cap? That was annoying.
I think it was meant to be don't take yourself too seriously kind of thing. But I'm not sure how that winds into the story.
There's a moment where Spud's character's talking to the other soldier about them both having kids. Mm. And they have this sort of nod at each other like, yeah, you're all right. And it's like, where's this relationship come from? So, we've all just said now, you know, the human part of this is just really, is really poor, but not particularly well acted. We have our final girl who we sort of don't care about. Honestly, that's the main thing about this. Like, I don't care about anyone in it. Even the predators don't really do anything for me. I thought the aliens were the best part, mostly. There are some CGI moments that I could have lived without. But, you know, they still did a good job with, you know, some of the effects from that. You know, the eggs still look great.
For 2004, I thought it was a good blend of practical and CG. I mean, you get some really, really bad ones. I think the Alien Queen at the end, it looks pretty poor.
Yeah, it's pretty ropey, yeah. Yeah. Mm. PS2 graphics. I will say that the aliens were good. Like, some of the alien, one of the early Alien versus Predator fights that runs on, that one's quite good.
Yeah. This is the sort of part of the film that I did enjoy. You know, I'm not going to slate it completely because it is a film that I have revisited quite a lot. But I think that's more because it's a little bit brainless and you can just sort of flick it on and not have to pay too much attention to it. But I like the, you know, the Predator. I like that story of the Predators that, you know, they send the sort of young down to prove themselves in this sort of escape room style pyramid. And, you know, they've got to, you know, find the shoulder cannons and all that sort of thing. And I think it's a shame that that's not fleshed out a little bit more. We get the whole sort of, you know, all these human characters that are just pointless and just foil for either the Predators or the alien. But I don't think the aliens actually kill, other than obviously people who have birthed aliens, they don't actually kill. I think they only kill one person.
Oh, yeah.
But then you get, like you said, that there's that big fight, or the big central fight between the alien predator that goes on quite a bit, which is really cool, and it's a nice action piece. But you think in the space of that scene, one alien kills two predators, and then we're down to one predator.
Yeah, they made that predator. Yeah, it was a bit. Annoying, really, that it should have been. It's hard to say what was going through anyone's mind for that, because they obviously wanted to make the aliens a threat. Because I think when you look at this from a fan point of view, you go, well, you know, predators win, you know.
Mm.
I think so. Then they needed to do that. But did you like any of those bits, Matthew?
Yeah, so I don't know if you guys have ever come across it, but there was a TV show in the mid to late noughties called Deadliest Warrior.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was basically a show where a bunch of, let's call them nerds, because they were, of which I am one, they would test out, like, weaponry on... ballistic torsos and stuff. Just see like how effective they'd be, and in the end, and then they would like pit one type of historical warrior against another. So you'd have like a samurai versus a Cherokee warrior, or a pirate versus a ninja, you know, things like that. And at the end of it, they would always put out like a dramatized version of what that fight might look like based on the data that they'd run through. And, you know, they'd run through the data like 100 times or whatever and decide who would win. And this, those scenes where the aliens fight the Predator, it was basically like the end of that. And I was sadly going, you know what? This would be fine if we just did this as like a short film. Because the rest of it's just, it's just dressing for that, isn't it? You know, and that's when you put the title Alien versus Predator, I mean, that's all we want. But you're not going to be able to make an hour and a half film of that. And, you know, they clearly didn't get the rest of the material right. So just cut it down and give us the fun bits.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah. I feel like there is the bones of a good movie here. It's just the flesh on it's rotting. There's definitely something there, but like I say, I thought the alien stuff was done well. Like a little bit of lurking in there, you know. They made good use of the tail and stuff like that. You know, I thought in general the alien stuff was pretty good. I wasn't massively on board with the Predators, and I thought, you know, they looked almost worse than how Predators looked in even, you know, the first one and the second one. They don't look as good.
Yeah, well, I think this, it was sort of taken over by Ian White, who was like I think still is quite a major sort of stunt performer in Hollywood. I think he did. I think he was. I might be completely wrong here, but I'm sure he played the Mountain at one point, or he was in Game of Thrones. No, he was the giant for the wild. You know, the Wildlings had the giant that was with them for a long time. I can't remember his name. In Game of Thrones, he's been in loads of stuff, Ian White, and I think he played all of the different predators in this film, but he's just not Kevin Peter Hall. He's stocky and he's chesty, you know. He's just really bulky, and there's a couple of points in this film where they're sort of stomping towards their victim and that the camera's shaking and everything else, and that's not what we know of the predators. You know, they're sort of nimble and really sort of sleek,
incredibly good hunters.
We get sort of stompy predators in this one.
Yeah, it's I suppose from a certain point of view you would say that all we've ever really seen is predators hunting humans, so who knows how they go against anyone else. Maybe Ben 10 could give them a kick in. He probably could, actually. Ben 10's pretty good.
Yeah.
There's another thing about this movie that slightly bugs me. And on the poster it says, "Whoever wins, we lose," and neither of them win, and we win.
Well, I think they were talking about the audience.
Whoever wins, you lose. An hour and a half of your day. No, I mean, it's not a good film by any stretch of the imagination, and there are only very few bits that we just talked about where I was like, you know, it piqued my interest. I did wonder if the reason that you like this, Peter, is because it's good for a nap, and I know you enjoy sleep.
Yeah, I do like a nap. But yeah, I mean, you know, like you both said, one way or another, you know, this there is a good film in here, and I think there are parts of it, you know, and like I said, I do enjoy the Alien and the Predator parts of the film, and I think they're quite interesting. There's quite an interesting story in there. But, and even with the, you know, even though I was never really on board with the Alexa Woods character, I do like that, you know, she becomes this sort of sidekick to the Predator because she's proven herself and stuff like that. I think had you had a better actress in that role, or somebody who, or the a more developed character, I suppose, in that role, and brought that concept in a lot earlier in the film, so that it was this sort of team up between the two for survival because they're the only ones left of their groups, and made that human group a little bit smaller, because you don't, unless you're gonna, you know, have 10 aliens on screen, which we don't really get. I think we get like 3 at one point, and that's about it. You don't need all those bodies. They're just there to be the foil of the Predators, essentially, and give birth to some aliens. So you could have had that group a lot smaller, cut them out a lot earlier in the film, and made it more of a survival film.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But they didn't.
No.
Well, does anyone else have anything really they want to say?
No, I think I'm done with it.
The only other thing I would throw in, just to defend this film a little bit more, like I said, you know, I'm not going to claim that this is a classic by any stretch, but it's a damn sight better than Alien vs. Predator Requiem.
The thing I thought about Alien vs. Predator Requiem, which is bad as well, but it's got slightly more horror elements about it.
I guess.
So I'd probably pick that over the two of them. But if there was a third secret option where I could just burn them, then I would choose that. I'll get them in sort of acid blood, then I would choose that. Well, let's have a look at the Facebook then and see if anybody said anything. Okay. Matt Crawley said, absolute dog turd. I am the biggest fan of the Alien franchise and a decent fan of most Predator films. And this made me so angry watching it in the cinema, seeing what they did to these icons. Fair enough. It's your opinion. Brian said, this is certainly entertainment. Whether or not it's the finest is certainly questionable. Anderson really seems to enjoy dicing Colin Salmon for some reason. That's for sure. That's, I don't know who it is. Oh, really?
So Colin Salmon, he was in Resident Evil as well, and he got the first Resident Evil film.
Oh, did he get lasered?
Yeah, he got lasered and sliced into sort of gridded, I think is the word, and he almost gets the same treatment here.
Oh, in the net?
In the net, yeah.
Yeah, I was a bit disappointed with that. I wanted the net to fully just dice the guy.
Right. Oh, there you go then. What else did he say? I remember liking this when it came out. I don't think it holds up all that well today. The tagline, whoever wins, we lose, doesn't really seem fitting to the film. And I think that's part of this film's downfall. And Vincent said, anyone who watches this dreck hoping for a decent entertainment certainly loses. So, a mixed bag there. Mixed bag of reviews. To be fair, Matt didn't actually say this when he was saying it. But I don't come away from this film going, oh, well, that's ruined anything else for me. Because I don't worry too much about that. Because it's obviously set, you know, timeline-wise, it doesn't work. And, you know, for either Alien or Predator, it doesn't feel like it works. And it feels like there's some rules that are out of place. And, you know, like we said, the Predators don't seem quite what you'd expect. But, you know, it doesn't ruin any of that for me. But, you know, I'm still probably going to have to go for a shit on this one, to be fair. Which is the second Lance Hendrickson film I've given a shit to. Although I quite liked him in Hell World, I think he was the only bit I did like. What do you think, Matthew? Where are you going?
Yeah, I'm going for a shit as well. Sorry, that sounded a bit weird, doesn't it? I'm not going to the toilet.
You got news?
I'm certainly not going with anyone else either. I'll keep that to myself. No, it's... Yeah, I think for the stuff you were saying, Peter, about how... well, actually, you both saying about how there's like... There's a good film in there somewhere, and the concepts of it are quite good. I think that just annoyed me more. Because I'm just thinking, like, you when you've got that, you've done to that what, you know, the Predator did to the Alien and vice versa. You know, and we could have had a much better film without really trying all that hard.
Yeah. Well, then you, Peter, are you gonna at least go for a middle of the road, or is it still shit?
No, I think it is. It is a shit, but it's a good shit.
It can't be a good shit.
No, and I think, you know, it is, like I said, it's. For me, it is a film that I can revisit and just sort of put on. This is a very much a bedtime film that I could just stick on in bed just to drift off kind of thing.
It's easy to not pay attention to it and then come back in when you see the fight scenes or something, you know.
Yeah, it's a lot of, it's brainless fun, really. And I did, you know, there is a certain amount of fun I had with it. Even when I first saw it, but I was, you know, you can't forego its bad points, unfortunately.
No. Oh, well, sadly, it was a shit all round, but I think we enjoyed having a little chat about it. And next week, we're going to be doing, I think, Dracula versus Frankenstein from 1971, yes. Which, to be honest, doesn't look up to much either. So, you know, I'm sure we'll get there. I'm sure there'll be some lovely choices, but it does look like fun and it does look a bit cheesy. So, yeah, look forward to that. And if you look up some photos, Frankenstein looks a bit like Leatherface. Not sure what they were going for there. Well, a Leatherface look, I suppose. I know it would have been pre-Leatherface. Oh, shut up, Mark. Right, so we're going to get into this final slice of bread, which I think is we're going to pitch an Alien or Predator movie by a director, that a sort of alternative director or something like that. Oh, I've been a mess this week. So, one of you go.
Well, I'll jump in first because I'm going to take the obvious one. Instead of Paul W.S. Anderson, Paul Thomas Anderson. the good, yeah. Paul Anderson filmmaker. I would just like to see a vibe-filled, meandering Alien and Predator set in the 70s. Just wandering around, nostalgia-filled Los Angeles. Probably getting into some dangerous scrapes. And yeah, I think that'd be really fun.
That does sound like fun. Go on then, PA, why don't you go?
Well, I mean, I would go for something a bit more obvious, I suppose, because before this film came out, and obviously there were the Alien versus Predator games and the comic books. I read quite a few of the comic books, and they're really, really good. They're really interesting read. And the game, or the main game that came out on sort of PC late 90s, I think, was a really interesting concept because it put, you know, you could play as an alien or as a predator or as a colonial marine. So I'd sort of go, I'd like to have seen James Cameron tackle this kind of film, and have the colonial marines from Aliens sort of entwined into the story.
All right.
Because, I mean, you know, one of the main sort of parts of this Alien vs. Predator that we just discussed, with the Alexa Woods character sort of becoming like a sidekick to the Predators, that's a concept taken from the original comic books. Mm-hmm. And I think that could have worked really well in that sort of, in the actual space setting and with the Marines, whether it was set after Aliens and, you know, James Cameron just taking that sort of aesthetic and that sort of filmmaking style that he has. I think it could have really worked.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's another sort of LV, whatever the number is, they go, you know, go back there, find the aliens still there, and then a Predator shows up and starts pissing about with the Marines as well.
That sounds like fun. Yeah. I mean, my first thought was David Lynch, but I couldn't quite think what he would do aside from, I don't know, making you watch a film backwards. Or having a Predator have an existential crisis. And the aliens wore a top hat for some reason. But I actually, in the end, went a bit more basic with it. I was thinking about the director of The Batman, Matt Reeves, because there was a game for Predator called Concrete Jungle, where you played as the Predator and he sort of went around doing his hunts. And when you think about it, it's very, very similar to Predator 2, but I'd like to see it, see something played from almost the Predator's perspective. You know, I think we've hit a point now where we don't necessarily need, you know, constant dialogue and stuff like that. So I think it would just be interesting to see something, you know, dark and gritty and, you know, just the Predator doing its thing.
Have either of you seen a short fan film called Batman Dead End?
No.
I haven't, no.
Find it on YouTube. I'm sure it's still on there, but it's incredible. It starts off with Batman and the Joker, and then basically Joker gets killed by a xenomorph. And then a Predator turns up. It's like an 8-10 minute film, something like that, but it's incredible. That's what they need to make, actually.
And make that. I forgot to say in Alien vs. Predator, I think they missed a trick not getting a face hugger on a penguin. I wanted to see an alien penguin.
Yeah. Penguin.
Penguin.
We just get a red alien.
Happy feeling. Happy feet, my ass. Anyway, there you go. There you go. We've done it. We've achieved another podcast. Versus month. It's fun. We're going to fight each other at some point, possibly in a triple threat match for the World Horror Championship or something like that. Should we go? I think we should. Oh, no. Wait. Social medias and such. Join them. Right, let's go.
Facebook, Instagram, Letterboxd. We're on all of them.
Yeah, the links are in the notes. So, you know, I think you've listened to enough of this now, so you should probably get on with your day. Unless you already were. Unless you've been cleaning while listening. Or... I don't know. What else could you be doing? Doesn't matter, does it? Let's go. Bye.
Bye.
See you later.
Bye.